Hey everybody, and welcome back. We are on chapter 11. We visit the Garden Gnome Emporium. In a way, it's nice to know there are Greek gods out there because you have somebody to blame when things go wrong. For instance, when you're walking away from a bus that has just been attacked by monster hags and blown up by lightning, and it's raining on top of everything else. But most people might think that it's really bad luck. But when you're a half-blood, you understand that some divine force really is trying to mess up your day. So, there we were, Annabeth, Grover, and I, walking through the woods along the New Jersey riverbank, the glow of New York City making the night sky yellow behind us, and the smell of the Hudson reeking in our nose. Grover was shivering and braying, his big goat eyes turned slit pupils and full of terror. Three kindly ones, all three at once! I was pretty much in shock myself. The explosion of the bus window still rang in my ear. But Annabeth kept pulling us along, saying, "Come on! The further away we get, the better! All our money was back there," I reminded her. "All our food and clothes, everything!" "Well, maybe if you hadn't decided to jump into the fight, what do you want me to do? Let you get killed? You didn't need to protect me, Percy. I would have been fine." "Sliced like sandwich bread," Grover put in. "But fine." "Shut up, goat boy," said Annabeth. Grover brayed mournfully. "Tin cans. A perfectly good bag of tin cans." We sloshed across mushy ground through nasty twisted trees that smelled like sour laundry. After a few minutes, Annabeth fell into line next to me. "Look, I..." Her voice faltered. "I appreciate you coming back for us, okay? That was really brave. We're a team, right?" She was silent for a few more steps. "It's just that if you died, aside from the fact that you would really suck for you, it would mean the quest was over. This may only be my chance to see the real world." The thunderstorm had finally let go. The city glow faded behind us, leaving us in almost total dark. I couldn't see anything of Annabeth except a glint of her blonde hair. "You haven't left Camp Half-Blood since you were 7? I asked her. "No, only short field trips. My dad..." "The history professor?" "Yeah, it didn't work out for me living at home. I mean, Camp Half-Blood is my home." She rushed her words out now, as if she was afraid somebody might try to stop her. "At camp, you train and train, and that's all and everything. But the real world is where the monsters are. That's where you learn whether you're good or not." If I didn't know any better, I could have sworn I heard doubt in her voice. "You're pretty good with that knife," I said. "You think so? Maybe we can piggyback ride a furry, if okay by you." I couldn't see, really see, but I thought she might have smiled. "You know," she said, "maybe I should tell you something funny back on the bus." Whatever she wanted to say was interrupted by a shrill toot toot toot, like the sound of an owl being tortured. "Hey, my reed pipes still work!" Grover smiled. "If I could just remember a fine path song, we could be out of these woods." He puffed out a few notes, but the tune still sounded suspiciously like Hilary Duff. Instead of finding a path, I immediately slammed into a tree and got a nice size knot on my head, added to the list of superpowers I did not have. Inferred vision. After tripping and cursing and generally feeling miserable for another mile or so, I started to see light up ahead. The colors of a neon sign. I could smell food. Fried, greasy, excellent food. I realized I hadn't eaten unhealthy since I arrived at Camp Half-Blood, where we lived on grape spread, cheese, and extra lean-cut nymph-prepared barbecue. This boy needed a double cheeseburger. We kept walking until I saw a deserted two-lane road through the trees. On the other side was closed-down gas station, a tattered billboard from the 1990s movie, and one open business, which was the source of the neon light and the good smell. It wasn't a fast-food restaurant, like I hoped. It was only one of those weird roadside curio shops that sells lawn flamingos and wooden Indians and cement grizzly bears and stuff like that. The main building was long, low warehouse, surrounded by acres of statuary. The neon sign above the gate was impossible for me to read, because if there's anything worse from my dyslexia than regular English, it was red cursive neon English. To me, it looked like, "An inchu mess, Gerberan Goblin." Meperomium. What the heck does that say? I asked. I don't know, Annabeth said. She loved reading so much. I'd forgotten she was dyslexic, too. Grover translated. Auntie M's Garden Gnome Emporium. Flanking the entrance as advertised were two cement garden gnomes, ugly bearding like runts, smiling and waving as if they were about to get their picture taken. I crossed the street, following the smell of hamburgers. Hey, Grover warned. The lights are on inside, Annabeth said. Maybe it's open. Snack bar? I said wistfully. Snack bar, she agreed. Are you too crazy? This place is weird. We ignored him. The front door was a forest of statues, cement animals, cement children, and even a cement satyr playing the pipes, which gave Grover the creeps. He bleated. Looks like my uncle, Fernandin. We stopped at the warehouse door. Don't knock, Grover bleated. I smell monsters. Your nose is clogged up from the Furies, Annabeth told him, and all I smell is burgers. Aren't you hungry? Meat, he said scornfully. I'm a vegetarian. We eat cheese chinoladas and aluminum cans, I reminded him. Those are vegetables. Come on, let's leave. These statues are looking at me. The door creaked open. Standing in front of us was a tall, Middle Eastern woman. At least, I assumed she was Middle Eastern, because she wore a long black gown that covered everything but her hands, and her head was completely veiled. Her eyes glinted behind a curtain of black gauze, but that was about all I could make out. Her coffee-colored hands looked old, but well-maintained and elegant, so I imagined that she was a grandmother who had once been a beautiful woman. Her accent seemed vaguely Middle Eastern, too. She said, Children, it's too late to be out alone. Where are your parents? They're. Annabeth started to say, We're orphans. I said, Orphans? The woman said. The word sounded alien in her mouth. But my dears, truly not. We got separated from our caravan, I said. Our circus caravan. The ringmaster told us to meet him up at the gas station if we got lost, but he may have forgotten, or maybe he had meant a different gas station. Anyways, we're lost. Is that food I smell? Oh, my dears, the woman said. You must come in, poor children. I am Auntie M. Go straight to the back of the warehouse, please. There is a dining area. We thanked her and went inside. Annabeth muttered to me, Circus caravan? Always have a strategy, right? Your head is full of kelp. The warehouse is filled with more statues, people of all different poses, wearing all different outfits with different expressions on their faces. I was thinking you have to be a pretty huge garden to fit even one of these statues, because they were all life-size, but mostly I was thinking about food. Go ahead, call me an idiot for walking into a stranger's lady's shop like that just because I'm hungry, but I do impulsive stuff sometimes. Plus, you've never smelled Auntie M's burgers. The aroma was like laughing gas in a dentist chair, made everything else go away. I barely noticed Grover's nervous whimpers, or the way the statue's eyes seemed to follow me, or the fact that Auntie M had locked the door behind us. All I cared about was finding the dining room, and sure enough, it was at the back of the warehouse, a fast food counter with a grill, a soda fountain, a pretzel heater, and a nacho cheese dispenser. Everything you could want, plus a few steel picnic tables out front. Please, sit down, Auntie Anne said. Awesome, I said. Grover said reluctantly. We don't have any money, ma'am. Before I could jab him in the ribs, Auntie Anne said, No, no children, no money. This is a special case, yes? It is my treat for such nice orphans. Thank you, ma'am, Annabeth said. Auntie M stiffened, as if Annabeth had done something wrong, but then the old woman relaxed just as quickly, so I figured it must have been my imagination. Quite all right, Annabeth said. She said, You have such beautiful gray eyes, child. Only later did I wonder how she knew Annabeth's name, even though we'd never introduced ourselves. Our hostess disappeared behind the snack counter and started cooking. Before we knew it, she brought us plastic tray heaping with double cheeseburgers, vanilla shakes, and an extra, extra large serving of French fries. I was halfway through my burger before I remembered to breathe. Annabeth slurped her shake. Grover picked at the fries and eyed the tray waxed paper liner as if he wanted to go for that, but he still looked too nervous to eat. What's that hissing noise? He asked. I listened. I didn't hear anything. Annabeth shook her head, hissing. Annabeth asked, Perhaps you hear the deep fryer oil. You have keen ears, Grover. I take vitamins for my ears. That's admirable, she said. But please, relax. Auntie M ate nothing. She hadn't taken her headdress even to cook, and now she sat forward and interlacing her fingers and watched us eat. It was a little unsettling having someone stare at you when I couldn't see her face, but I felt satisfied after the burger and a little sleepy, and I figured that the least I could do was try to make some small talk with our hostess. So, you sell gnomes, I said, trying to sound interested. Oh, yes, Auntie M said, and animals and people. Anything for the garden. Custom orders. Statuary is very popular, you know. A lot of business on this road? Not so much, no. Since the highway was built, most cars, they do not go this way now. I must cherish every customer I get. My neck tingled, as if somebody was looking at me. I turned, but it was just a statue of a young girl holding an Easter basket. The detail was incredible, much better than I'd seen in most garden statues, but something was wrong with her face. It looked as if she was startled, or even terrified. Ah, Auntie M said sadly, you notice some of the creatures do not turn out as well. They are marred. They do not sell. The face is the hardest to get right. Always the face. You make the statues yourself? I asked. Oh, yes. Once upon a time, I had two sisters to help me in the business, but they have passed on, and NTM is alone. I have only my statues. This is why I make them, you see. They are my company. The sadness in her voice sounded so deep, so real, that I couldn't help feeling sorry for her. Annabeth had stopped eating. She sat forward and said, Two sisters? It's a terrible story, Auntie Anne said. Not one for children, really. You know, Annabeth, a bad woman was jealous of me long ago when I was young. I had a boyfriend, you know, and this bad woman was determined to break us apart. She caused a terrible accident. My sisters stayed by me. They shared my bad fortune as long as they could, but eventually they passed on. They faded away. I am alone, have survived, but at a price. Such a price. I wasn't sure what she meant, but I felt bad for her. My eyelids kept getting heavier, my full stomach making me sleepy. Poor old lady, who would want to hurt somebody so nice? Percy, Annabeth was shaking me to get my attention. We should go. I mean, the ringmaster will be waiting. She sounded tense. I wasn't sure why. Grover was eating the wax paper off the tray now, but if Aunt Anne found that strange, she didn't say anything. Such beautiful gray eyes, Auntie M told Annabeth again. My, yes, it has been a long time since I've seen gray eyes like those. She reached out as if to stroke Annabeth's cheek, but Annabeth stood up abruptly. Well, really should go. Yes, Grover swallowed his wax paper and stood up. The ringmaster is waiting, right? I didn't want to leave. I felt full and content. Auntie Anne was so nice. I wanted to stay with her a while. Please, dears, Auntie Anne pleaded. I so rarely get to be with children. Before you go, won't you at least sit for a pose? A pose? Annabeth asked wearily. A photograph. I will use it to model a new statue set. Children are so popular, you see. Everyone loves children. Annabeth shifted her weight from foot to foot. I don't think we can, ma'am. Come on, Percy. Sure, we can, I said. I was irritated with Annabeth for being so bossy, so rude to an old lady who has just fed us for free. It's just a photo, Annabeth. What's the harm? Yes, Annabeth. That woman purred. No harm. I could tell Annabeth didn't like it, but she allowed Auntie M to lead us back on the front door into the garden of statues. Auntie M directed us to a porch bench next to the stone satyr. Now, she said, I'll just position you correctly, the young girl in the middle, I think, and the two young gentlemen on either side. Not much light for the photo, I remarked. Oh, enough, Auntie M said, enough for us to see each other, yes? Where's your camera? Grover asked. Auntie M stepped back, as if to admire the shot. Now, the face is most difficult. Can you smile for me, please? Everyone, a large smile. Grover glanced at the cement satyr next to him and mumbled, "That sure looks like Uncle Fernandin." "Grover," Auntie M. Chair said, "this way, my dear." She had no camera in her hands. "Percy," Annabeth said. Some instinct warned me to listen to Annabeth, but I was fighting the sleepy feeling, the comfortable lull that came from the food and the old lady's voice. "I will just be a moment," Annabeth said. "You know, I can't see you very well in this cursed veil." "Percy, something's wrong," Annabeth insisted. "Wrong?" Aunt Em said, reaching up to undo the wrap on her head. "Not at all, dear. I have such noble companion tonight. What could be wrong?" "That is Uncle Fernand," Grover gasped. "Look away from her," Annabeth shouted. She whipped her Yankee's cap out of her head and vanished. Her invisible hand pushed Grover and me both off the bench. I was on the ground, looking at Auntie M's sandaled feet. I could hear Grover scrambling off in one direction, Annabeth in another. But I was too dazed to move. Then I heard a strange rasping sound above me. My eyes rose to Auntie Anne's hems, which had become gnarled and warty, and sharp bronze talons her fingers. I almost looked higher, but somewhere off to my left, Annabeth screamed, "No, don't!" More rasping, the sound of tiny snakes right above my head, from about where Auntie Anne's head would be. "Run!" Grover bleated. I heard him racing around across the gravel, yelling, "Maya!" to kickstart his flying sneakers. I couldn't move. I stared at Auntie Anne's gnarling claws and started to fight the groggy trance the old woman had put me in. "Such a pity to destroy a handsome young face," she said to me soothingly. "Stay with me, Percy. All you have to do is look up." I fought the urge to obey. Indeed, instead, I looked to one side and saw one of the glass spheres people put in the garden, a gazing ball. I could see Auntie M's dark reflection in the orange glass. Her headdress was gone, revealing her face as a shimmering pale circle. Her hair was moving, withering like serpents. Auntie M? How could I have been so stupid? Think, I told myself. How did Medusa die in the myth? But I couldn't think. Something told me that in the myth, Medusa had been asleep when she was attacked by my namesake, Perseus. She wasn't anywhere near asleep now. If she wanted, she could take those talons right now and rake open my face. "The gray-eyed one did this to me, Percy," Medusa said. She didn't sound anything like a monster. Her voice invited me to look up and sympathize with a poor old grandmother. "Annabeth's mother, the cursed Athena, turned me from a beautiful woman into this." "Don't listen to her," Annabeth's voice shouted somewhere in the statuary. "Run, Percy!" "Silence," Medusa snarled. Then her voice modulated back to a comforting purr. "You see why I must destroy the girl, Percy. She is my enemy's daughter. I shall crush her statue to dust. For you, dear Percy, you need not suffer." "No," I muttered. I tried to make my legs move. "Did you really want to help the gods?" Medusa asked. "Do you understand what awaits you on this foolish quest?" "Percy, what will happen if you reach the underworld?" "Do not be a pawn of Olympian, my dear. You would be better off as a statue. Less painful. Less pain." "Percy!" Behind me, I heard a buzzing sound, like 200-pound hummingbird in a nosedive. Grover yelled, "Duck!" I turned, and there he was in the night sky, flying in from a 12 o'clock with his winged shoes fluttering. Grover holding a tree branch the size of a baseball bat, his eyes were shut tight. His head twitched from side to side. He was navigating by ears and nose alone. "Duck!" he yelled. "I'll get her!" The final jolted me into action. Knowing Grover, I was sure he'd miss Medusa and nail me. I dove to one side. Thwack! At first, I figured it was the sound of Grover hitting a tree. But then Medusa roared with rage. "You miserable satyr!" she snarled. "I add you to my collection!" "That's for Uncle Fernandin!" Grover yelled back. I scrambled away and hid in the satyr while Grover swooped down for another pass. Crack! Medusa yelled. Her snake hair hissed and spitting. Right next to me, Anubis' voice said, Percy! I jumped so high my feet nearly cleared a garden gnome. Jeez, don't do that! Anubis took off her Yankee cap and became visible. You have to cut her head off. What? Are you crazy? Let's get out of here! Medusa is a menace. She's evil. I kill her myself, but... Anubis swallowed, as if it were about to make a difficult admission. But you've got the better weapon. Besides, I'd never get close enough to her. She'd slice me to bits because of my mother. You've got a chance. Why? I can't. Look, do you want her turning more innocent people into statues? She pointed to the pair of statue lovers, a man and a woman with their arms around each other, turned to stone by the monster. Annabeth groped a green gazing ball from a nearby pedestal. A polished shield will be better, she studied the sphere seriously, but convexity will cause some distortion. The reflection size should be off by a factor of... Would you speak English? I am, she tossed the ball, glass ball. Just look at her in the glass. Never look at her directly. Hey, guys, Grover yelled somewhere around us. I think she's unconscious. Rawr! Maybe not, Grover corrected. He went in for another pass with the tree branch. Hurry, Annabeth told me. Grover's got a great nose, but he'll eventually crash. I took up my pen and uncapped it. The bronze blade of Riptide elongated in my hand. I followed the hissing and spitting sounds from Medusa's hair. I kept my eyes locked on the gazing ball so I could only glimpse Medusa's reflection, not the real thing. Then, in a green-tinted glass, I saw her. Grover was coming in for another pass at the bat, but this time he flew a little too low. Medusa grabbed the stick and pulled him off course. He stumbled through the air and crashed in the arms of a stone grizzly bear with a painful oomph. Medusa was about to lunge at him when I yelled, Hey! I advanced on her, which wasn't easy, holding a sword and a glass ball. If she charged, I'd have a hard time defending myself, but she let me approach 20 feet. 10 feet. I could see the reflection of her face now. Surely it wasn't really that ugly. The green swirls of the gazing ball must be distorting it, but making it look worse. You wouldn't harm an old lady, Percy, she crooned. I know you wouldn't. I hesitated, fascinated by the face I saw reflected in the glass. The eyes seemed to burn straight through the green tint, making my arms go weak. From the cement grizzly, Grover groaned, Percy, don't listen to her. Medusa cackled, too late. She lunged at me with her talons. I slashed up with the sword, heard a sickening shwoo. And a hissing like wind rushing out of a cavern, the sound of a monster disintegrating. Something fell to the ground next to my feet. It took all my whirlpool now to look. I could feel warm oozing sock soaking into my sock, like dying snakehead tugging on my shoelaces. Oh, yuck, Grover said. His eyes were still tightly closed, but I guess he could hear the thing gurgling and steaming. Mega yuck. Annabeth came up next to me, her eyes fixed on the sky. She was holding Medusa's black veil. She said, Don't move. Very, very carefully, without looking down, she knelt down, draped the monster's head in a black cloth, then picked it up. But it was still dripping green juice. Are you okay? She said. Her voice trembled. Yeah, I nodded. Though I felt like throwing up my double cheeseburger. Why didn't the head evaporate? Once you've severed it, it becomes a spoil of war, she said. Same as your minotaur horn. It doesn't unwrap the head, but it still petrifies you. Grover moaned as he climbed down from the grizzly statue. He had a big welt on his forehead, and his green rasta cap hung from one of his little goat horns, and his fake feet had been knocked off his hooves. The magic sneakers were flying aimlessly around his head. The Red Baron, I said. Good job, man. He managed a basketball grin. That really was not fun, though. Well, hitting her with a stick part, that was fun. But crashing into a concrete bear, not fun. He snatched his shoes out of the air. I recapped my sword. Together, the three of us stumbled back into the warehouse. We found some old plastic grocery bags behind the snack counter and double-wrapped Medusa's head. We plopped it on the table where we'd eaten our dinner and sat around it. too exhausted to speak. Finally, I said, "So, we have Athena to thank for that monster." Annabeth flashed me an irritated look. "Your dad, actually. Don't you remember? Medusa was Poseidon's girlfriend. They decided to meet in my mother's temple. That's why Athena turned her into a monster. Medusa and her two sisters, who have helped her get into the temple, they became the three Gorgons. That's why Medusa wanted to slice me up, but she wanted to preserve you as a nice statue. She's still sweet on your dad. You probably reminded her of him." My face was burning. "Oh, so now it's my fault we met Medusa." Annabeth straightened. It was a bad imitation of my voice. She said, "It's just a photo, Annabeth. What's the harm?" "Forget it," I said. "You're impossible. You're insufferable. You're..." "Hey," Grover interrupted, "you two are giving me a migraine, and satyrs don't even get migraines. What are we going to do with the head?" I stared at the thing. A little snake was hanging out of a hole in the plastic. The words printed on the side of the bag said, "We appreciate your business." I was angry, not just at Annabeth and my mom, but with all the gods for this whole quest, for getting us blown off the road and in two major fights for the first day out from camp. At this rate, we'd never make it to L.A. alive, much less before the summer solstice. "How?" Medusa said. "Don't be the pawn of the Olympians, my dear. You would be better off as a statue." I get up. "I'll be back." "Percy," Annabeth called after me. "What are you?" I searched the back of the warehouse until I found Medusa's office. Her account book showed her six most recent sales, all shipment to the underworld to decorate Hades and Persephone's garden. According to one freight bill, the underworld's billing address was Doha Recording Studios, West Hollywood, California. I folded up the bill and stuffed it in my pocket. In the cash register, I found $20, a few golden drachmas, and some packing slips from Hermes and Overnight Express, each with a little leather bag attached for coins. I rummaged around the rest of the office till I found the right size bag. I went back to the picnic table, packed up Medusa's head, and filled out a delivery slip. "The god Mount Olympus, 60th floor, Empire State Building, New York, New York. With best wishes, Percy Jackson." "They're not gonna like that," Grover warned. "They'll think you're impertinent." I poured some golden drachmas in the pouch, and as soon as it closed it, there was a sound like a cash register. Then the package floated off to the table and disappeared with a pop. "I am impertinent," I said. I looked at Annabeth, daring her to criticize. She didn't. She seemed resigned to the fact that I had a major talent for ticking off the gods. "Come on," she muttered. "We need a new plan."